Zedek, Zedek, Teared Off by Gold Hearted Sky, read by CookieMom6067, extended version. They all have their reasons for doing this. For Joe, it's the inherent drive to meet injustice head-on, the same reason his heart called him to Jerusalem almost 8.5 centuries ago. Joe can't run from a fight, not when innocent people are involved. For Nikki, it's because he knows firsthand what men like this can do, the destruction they can cause when left unchecked as he once was. He's not about to let fascism win, especially not here at home. For Booker, it's personal. It's his people being packed into the ghettos and crammed into train cars. It's his people being sent to camps built specifically to eliminate them. It's his people, his community, his faith. And Booker refuses to stand by for even a single second. You know, Sebastian, this kind of feels like you are trying to cheat. He looks up from the mess of fuses and explosives on the table in front of him and smirks. It's not cheating. Just because you decided that a sniper rifle was a better use of your time and expertise doesn't mean we all fell into that trap. Nikki mumbles a string of dismissive Ligurian cut off by Joe's bright ringing laughter from his spot by the window. Booker raises an eyebrow at him, and Joe motions one-handedly to the Genoan. He says at least he's not the only one who doesn't know how to use a sword, he translates, dark eyes sparkling. Why do I need a sword when I can make a bomb? He catches the hidden twitch of a smile on Nikki's Cupid's bow mouth and sets back to work. They're holed up in an attic in Lidice, a small village just outside of Prague, and have been for a few days now. Booker had managed to smuggle a handful of intel off a drunk SS officer he had met in a bar, pulling an old sleight of hand that he hadn't practiced since 1844, without his arguably shoddy German giving him away, and they were now doing the last bit of preparation before setting off for the city. There were rumors that Hitler was transferring Reinhard Heydrich from Czechoslovakia to Nazi-occupied France to quell the growing La Resistance. And the moment Booker had heard those whisperings, the decision was already made. Heydrich was a lead organizer of Kristallnacht and had been at the forefront of every piece of intelligence they could get their hands on. He was one of Hitler's top men, and it was the first chance they've had at taking out such a high-ranking official, even though they've been picking off German units for the last 2 years. They couldn't let an opportunity like this pass them by. It takes Booker another 4 or so hours to finish the bombs, and by the time he does, the clock reads well past 1 a.m. He can hear Joe snoring softly from the single bed in the room and glances over at Nikki's unmoving form by the window, both men illuminated by the moonlight washing in through the glass pane. Nikki's deep-set silver-pale eyes turn to him suddenly, almost glowing like a cat's, and there's an unreadable expression on his face. Are you finally done with your silly little bombs? An exhausted laugh falls from his mouth as Booker scrubs a worn hand over his face. Yeah, all my silly pipe bombs are done and ready to go. He mumbles before tilting his head towards the slumbering man. How long has he been asleep? About an hour now, Nikki says quietly, his face softening into something gentle, something reverent, as he looks at Joe. It's a face Booker knows well, first secondhand, and now intimately, and it lingers fondly when Nikki turns back to him. Are you going to try to get some rest as well? It's going to be a long day tomorrow. Shaking his head, he rolls his aching shoulders. No, I can never sleep before missions, you know that. Too much on my mind. The clock ticks in the heavy, pregnant silence before Nikki pulls his bare feet underneath himself, making space on the bench. Then come be my company, at least. He sighs and hauls himself from the chair. His heart is beating hard and fast in his chest for some indeterminate reason as he crosses the room and sits across from the Italian. For the briefest moment, he feels absolutely trapped under Nikki's unyielding gaze. It's different when Andy's not here, when it's just the three of them, and he wonders if Nikki can feel it too. The fragility Booker feels being loved by them isn't so different from the way Nikki first felt in Joe's adoration. That much he's sure of. Booker watches the gentle rise and fall of Joe's chest, closing his eyes when he feels a hand come to rest on his knee. "Nikki, I'm fine," he whispers, knowing the other man can sense his racing thoughts. "Please don't." But it comes anyway. "Are you sure you want to do this, Sebastian?" "Of course I want to do this. You know what kind of a man Heydrich is." "There are always consequences we can't see coming," Nikki murmurs, his voice soft and distant in a way that doesn't ease Booker's nervousness. "Ripples in the water is something we've learned over the centuries. Andy understands it best of all. But I wanted to make sure you are ready for them, if and when they come." A smirk pulls at Booker's mouth. "You're just worried I'm going to add a couple more Nazis to my count." There's a mischievous glint in the other man's eye as Nikki kicks him gently in the shin with the heel of his foot. "We count the body, not the rank. Don't get too sure of yourself. Otherwise, I'll take your big fish fascist from 300 yards myself." He wraps his fingers around the Italian's ankle, pulling Nikki across the bench in one swift motion. Booker can see the sparkle of amusement in the other man's eyes, and he barely notices how close their faces are. "You know, Nikki," he murmurs, "I'd honestly like to see you try." Even now, even after being welcomed into their hearts, it still catches Booker off guard when the distance between them suddenly closes and Nikki's lips brush against his own. Every intrusive thought, every doubt in his mind suddenly disappears like smoke in the wind. Booker's eyes slip shut and he grounds himself in the steady hand that wraps around the back of his neck. He loses himself in the kiss, in Nikki, and lets himself sag into the touch and the silence surrounding them both. It feels like forever before they break apart, Nikki holding fast to him still as he murmurs, "Sebastian, look at me." Their eyes meet, and Booker can feel the resolve pouring off the other man in waves, swirling in his ocean blue eyes like a storm that's just off the coast. Nikki's thumb brushes over the sharp line of his jaw, and all the air in Booker's lungs rushes out in one single breath. "Tell me I'm doing the right thing," Booker whispers, his brows knitting together in the center of his forehead. "I need to hear it just once." "You're doing the right thing," Nikki reassures firmly. "After everything we have done, after everything we have seen, you know that you are making the right call." There's a flash of tender devotion written clear across his face, glittering in the moonlight, and Booker's heart skips a beat under the weight of it. Nikki's mouth curls into a smile and he leans forward again, their noses brushing against one another's. "Joe and I will see you through this. Always. Always." The bedsheets rustle as Joe tosses on the creaky mattress, and neither of them can help but let their gazes drift over to the older man, doing nothing but watching him sleep. It's strange how easily they fell into a dynamic they have now, one Booker doesn't dare speak of out loud, lest he watch it slip through his fingers. But nothing in his life has ever felt more natural. So he allows his rabbiting heart to race inside his ribs, allows Nikki to keep his heavy hand where it rests, and steadies himself with the knowledge that, no matter what happens, these two men will be at his side. They sit at the bench by the window, unmoving, until the sun rises blood red in the sky. "It was almost too easy," Booker tells himself. The first bombs went off after the car slowed at the hairpin bend on the road to the Troya Bridge, the second charge going off mere seconds later, cutting off both sides and sending the vehicle careening into a nearby tree. Gunshots echoed in the woods after the driver stumbled from the smoking car, falling to two well-placed shots from Nikki. It hadn't taken much time for Booker and Joe to catch up and drag Heydrich and his guard from the back seat, the older man silently granting him the dispensation of punishment. It was always going to be Booker's call. He had loomed over Heydrich, gun pressed to the German's temple, and hissed, "I want the last face you'll ever see to be the face of the Jew who is going to kill you," before burying two bullets in the man's skull. It had been far too fucking easy. There was little time to celebrate their success, to let his relief sink in fully, not when the news had crackled through their radio 2 weeks after the ambush. Booker's blood ran cold as he listened to the intercepted transmission, staring across the small bunker at Nikki and Joe's stunned faces. Even though they heard what had happened, nothing could ever prepare him for seeing it firsthand. Ash crunches underneath his boots like snow, and he can't hear anything but the rush of furious blood in his ears and the faint sound of Nikki praying. The air is stale and rancid. Booker can all but taste the death with every breath as he takes in the ruined village. Gone is the attic they had lightheartedly teased each other in, the bakery where Joe had haggled for bread in the morning, and the schoolhouse down the street where Booker had heard children playing. All of it now razed to the ground, ripples in the water, just like Nikki said, consequences. Booker. A hand brushes over his arm. Sebastian. Don't, he growls, tearing himself away from Joe and hurling his rifle to the ground. He's seen the pile of lifeless men shot execution style and doesn't even want to think of what happened to the women and children, though he's got a good enough guess. Don't fucking try and tell me this wasn't because of us. It affects them both. There's no denying it. Booker can see the pain in the other man's eyes, but Joe has experienced enduring it that only time gives. So he steps back, grants Booker the space he needs, and only says, "Sometimes this happens. Sometimes we can't save everyone." "None of this matters, Joe," he shouts, frustration flooding off him in rogue waves. It's not even frustration at this point, just rage. "Heydrich is dead. I made sure of that myself. And they killed everyone just because we were here. All these people are dead because of us, because of me, because of the call I made. They're not even fucking Jewish either. Can you imagine what they're going to do to my people now?" Booker's fist clenched so tight that he can feel his nails bite into his palms, and Joe still hasn't moved an inch. "All of this is for fucking nothing." His words echo around the empty woods and fields, and the world is so quiet that nothing but his heavy breathing makes a sound. Joe's eyes are so dark, they look like pits of deep night sky when he finally speaks. "What's your count, Booker?" Fists still clenched, muscles still tight, he spits, 500 and not that count." Joe is staring straight into whatever soul Booker still has left in his body, and he's never felt more laid bare in his life. "Don't tell me you don't know it, because you'll be a liar if you do." He clenches his teeth so hard that he's surprised they don't crack. Booker knows what count Joe is speaking of, the count of every fellow Jew. He's been personally responsible for smuggling out of Europe through forged documents, passports, and visas. He knows that count far too well. It keeps him up at night because it will never be high enough to assuage his guilt. 3,412, he snarls, the number burning its way up his too tight throat. That number matters, Joe says, his usually warm voice so sharp and stern that it feels like a knife through Booker's chest. He wonders if Joe can see that pain spilling out of the wound like fresh blood. That number matters to every single person and family that you managed to get out, Book. It wasn't me or Nikki making those passports. It was you. He reaches out and curls a steady hand around the nape of Booker's neck, offering the first quirk of a smile. Besides, what's that old saying? He who saves a life saves. A breathless laugh punches out of his chest and Booker sags under his touch. No fight left in him as he says, Joe, I swear to God, if you start quoting the Talmud at me, I'm going to be forced to shoot you in the face. We'd both never hear the end of it from Nikki if you do, Joe murmurs, softer this time as his fingers fall from Booker's neck and brush over his heart. They linger there, reassuring and steady, and the only thing Booker needs right now. I know how hard this is, Joe. I know how hard it is, he continues, fingers tangling in the worn fabric of Booker's shirt. I know how far you think we still have to go, but Nikki and I are going to see you to the end of this, just like we said we would. There's a gentleness in Joe's eyes when Booker meets his gaze, born not from the absence of violence, but despite the abundance of it. And Booker has to wonder if he'll ever find peace like that. A heavy sigh falls from his lips as he raises his hand to cover Joe's, fingers curling around his palm as his heartbeat slows. Will it ever be enough? Booker asks quietly. Even at the end? I don't know, Joe says, leaning forward to press their foreheads together. But we can at least do something. Booker nods, defeatedly accepting the unrushed kiss that the older man gives him without protest. For a moment, he can forget about the destruction. For a moment, he can forget about his rage. For just a moment, he can unshoulder his grief and let Joe and Nikki bear that weight. For just a moment, his mind goes quiet. His eyes flutter open when he feels Joe grin against his lips. There you are, Sebastian, he murmurs, tugging gently on Booker's shirt. Booker feels a tired grin pull on his mouth despite himself when Joe's other hand comes up to pat his cheek gently. Don't make me have to remind you what you should be focusing on again, okay? He raises an eyebrow, asking sardonically, So what, we're going to stop hunting Nazis now? Fuck no, Joe laughs. The tension in the air finally dissipating. I've still got to catch up to you and Nikki. Don't think I haven't heard you two giggling like schoolgirls about how far behind my count is. The thin smile on Booker's face strains at the edges as he sighs quietly, looking around at the destruction around them. Bodies will need to be buried. Markers will need to be made. So much to do, and somehow there's never enough time. Even with the endless years they have ahead of them. Somebody has to answer for this, Joe, he murmurs. They will, the older man says, as the resolve settles in them both, every last one of them. The echoing gunshots still ring in his ears long after they end, even as Booker stumbles across the threshold of the house just outside of Munich. It had been the home of a Jewish family that he had forged documents and visas for in an effort to get them out of Germany, and for the last day or two had been the closest thing to a safe house they could find. Booker keeps it in the back of his mind that, if anyone comes looking for the occupants inside, they will fare far better than the Adlers. But tonight? Tonight he is so tired. His blood-stained hands fumble with the buttons on his shirt, trembling so much that it takes him almost three tries to get them off completely. Booker can hear Joe and Nikki's equally worn voices behind him, the metallic clattering of guns on the table, the running water in the sink. His own heavy heartbeat pounds behind his eyes as he strips out of his stained clothing. Book? Joe's hand smooths over the small of his back, but Booker brushes him off with a quick, I have work to do. It's constantly on his mind ever since Andy's letter from Berlin had arrived warning of an upcoming mass arrest planned for all Jews in Paris. He had thousands of visas and passports and checkpoint documentation to create and less than a month to do so. There just wasn't enough time. Booker scrubs his hands over his thighs, but the faint crimson remains crusted into the lines of his palms and underneath his nails, and he wonders if he'll ever be clean of it. And the Nazis said he was the one with the dirty blood. He stares at the stacks of papers on the desk in the small office, the open leather passport covers, and his scattered collection of stamps in pure exhaustion. How long has it been since he slept? Since he ate? Since Booker even had a moment to breathe without looking over his shoulder? But the work comes first, and every second he waits is the second he's putting lives in danger. His vision tunnels as Booker drops into the chair and hunches over his forgeries, his shaking hands working as fast as he can for what feels like hours. There are over 20,000 Jews living in Paris, and while he knows he can't possibly get everyone out, he has to get as many as he can before July. He's seen intel of the camps, has met resistance fighters who have seen the gas chambers themselves, and the overwhelming sense of dread never seems to end in this world. He's in an ocean of obligation, just trying to keep his head above water, and right now, he's drowning in it. Sebastian? Nikki calls from the doorway, his accented voice heavy with exhaustion. Booker clenches the needle tighter between his calloused fingers, punching it through the next hole in the leather. Sebastian, the Genoan says again, you need to come eat. I can't, he mumbles, throat tight. I need to keep working. No, what you need is to come eat something, Nikki insists. His footsteps echo behind him approaching, but Booker doesn't look up. You haven't eaten since this morning. I don't even think you've had water since then, either. A hand comes down on his shoulder, and he tries not to flinch away from Nikki's touch. You need to rest. I can't, Booker shouts, throwing the passport in his hands across the desk. His neat stacks of papers spill, completed visas and blank exit documents fluttering off the edge, and he feels like he's falling apart just as easily. Sebastian, Joe told me that this is what I have to do. He chokes before looking up at Nikki with tears of fatigue in his eyes. That this is what I have to focus on. Booker's shoulders sag as the other man kneels beside him, Nikki's face laced with worry. But there are tens of thousands of people that need my help, and I only have a couple weeks to get everything together. Nikki takes his hand carefully, his thumb brushing over stained skin, and murmurs, and you'll get nothing done unless you take care of yourself, too. Nobody else gets that luxury, Booker says. All of his muscles feel tight, and yet somehow he's still shaking. He pulls his hand free of Nikki's and clenches his fingers into white-knuckled fists. How can I allow it for myself? Because you are still here. Because you are still alive, even through all this horror. Nikki's voice is quiet and distant, and there's a far-off look in his eyes like he's trapped somewhere in the past. But he still stares up at Booker with undeniable fealty as he whispers, You don't have to shoulder all the pain of your people, Sebastian. A broken and shuddering sob-like breath spills from Booker's mouth as he shakes his head. I still feel all of it, Nikki. But even his protests fall silent when the other man rises to his feet and presses his warm lips to Booker's forehead, reminding him that their hearts are still beating strong in their chests. He makes no further dissent as Nikki pulls him to unsteady feet and leads him into the family room, where Joe is waiting for them both with open arms and a still warm meal at the table. Carving out quiet moments in the midst of a genocide, and Booker will cling to them as long as he's allowed. Nikki settles him in a chair, his weight making the wood creak as Joe places a bowl of clean water in front of him. Booker is too tired to move, too tired to breathe,
too tired to do anything but stare as Joe takes his hands and sinks them into the warm water, the older man's thumbs scrubbing over the skin with meticulous precision.
The clear water goes cloudy as Joe works the dried blood from the crevices of his knuckles and fingers. Booker's voice sounds raw in his head and even worse when it hits his ears as he croaks, "You don't need to do this." Joe looks up from his work and his face pinches tight with concern. "Yes, we do." He shakes his head, avoiding both of their worried gazes as he says, "It's my work. It's my people." Booker's palms turn in the water, and the blood of the men who want to kill him and everyone who shares his heritage collects along the edge of the bowl. "It's my burden." "That doesn't mean you carry it alone," Nikki says gently. "Your fight is our fight."
Booker's shoulders sag, and his gaze drifts back to the hallway where his desk and his papers and his stamps sit, waiting for him to return.
He pulls his hands from the water, skin finally clean of Nazi blood, and watches the remnants drip from his palms onto the tablecloth before asking, "What if it gets to be too much for you two?" The knot in his chest loosens just a little as he hears Joe chuckle, just a low and soft rumble from the deepest place in his chest. "If it's for you," Joe murmurs, glancing between Booker and Nikki, "I don't think you need to worry about us." And so the weight on his shoulders shifts. The papers spread from his desk to the floor as Booker walks Joe and Nikki through the steps of what he needs from them. They work through what little night they have left, Nikki sewing passports and Joe stamping page after page of exit visas as Booker's neat handwriting fills the blank pages until they have nearly three boxes to show for their work. He writes and writes until he can barely keep his eyes open, until the pen falls from his hand and he makes no protest as Joe hauls him from the chair and into the bedroom down the hall. The older man looks just as tired as he is, but Joe's voice shows no sign of it as he rolls Booker onto the thin mattress and says, "Nikki and I will keep doing what we can. You need to rest." Booker's fingertips linger on Joe's arm as he stares up at him with half-lidded eyes. "Thank you," he whispers, "for everything." The faint dawn light that has broken through the cracked curtains reflects in Joe's dark eyes, his face drowning in adoration as a small grin cracks his lips. "There's nothing to thank us for, though this might mean Nikki and I will have our own count to start." A weary laugh is the only thing Booker can manage as sleep overtakes him faster than he means it to, but the work continues. Booker learns to savor the moments of happiness when they come to him. It's been 3 weeks since the tragedy at Lidice, and they've managed to hunt down nearly all 500 of the soldiers responsible for carrying out the orders, plus a few high-ranking officers they found along the way. It's not enough. It'll never be enough. But it's a start. The world is still in flames. His people are still under attack. But tonight, Booker can rest. The rain falls in a heavy roar outside, the summer storm cutting through the humidity from earlier, but none of them move to dress in anything more than the underclothes that they've spent the day in. The dozens of boxes of documents sit against the far wall of their small flat, ready for tomorrow's distribution, and just the sight of it settles Booker's racing heart. The remnants from their long-forgotten meal lay on the plates behind them, and the three of them lounge around the burning lantern in the middle of the room. Booker's fingers curl around the glass in front of him, cheeks aching from smiling so hard as Nikki recounts his run-in with a couple of German SS patrol soldiers. "They searched me and found a picture of Joe in my papers, found one of his letters as well," the Genoan says, eyes glittering behind an almost stoic expression. They had me at gunpoint, and one of them read the letter out loud. They all laughed, and the head guard asked, "Who is this, your boyfriend? He's not a Jew, is he?" Nikki's gaze flits to meet Joe's, who offers his love a smile before sending a clandestine wink to Booker. "And what did you say?" Booker asks before taking a sip of the sharp whiskey in his hand. The right-hand corner of Nikki's mouth curls, and those aquamarine eyes turn on him, and Booker has never felt more willingly ensnared. "I said, he isn't, but my other boyfriend is." A snort spills from Booker, and he coughs a little, clearing the whiskey from his sinuses as the other man's smile spreads fully. Joe's sharp laughter echoes in the hollow flat, and Nikki gently pinches his side to shush him before saying, "They were too stunned to fight back. Barely even noticed me putting a couple bullets in their skulls." Booker smirks and raises an eyebrow. "And added another couple Nazis to your count?" Nikki makes a face of nonchalance and shrugs. "Maybe. Might have even passed you after all these weeks," he says, feigning ignorance. There's no way that neither he nor Joe has passed Booker's count, and they all know it. But Booker indulges in the act anyway, allows Nikki to continue with, "Besides, we haven't all done an updated count since before Prague." Joe's dark eyes reflect the lightning outside as a roll of thunder shakes the windows as he turns to Booker. "Care to do the honors?" 770. 651. 453. "Fuck you both. How am I almost 200 behind Nikki?" Joe gripes, dramatically tipping over on the floor. Booker laughs and uses his glass to motion between the two men, spilling whiskey over his fingers. "You're too nice. You always end up letting Nikki finish them off. It's a dead Nazi count, not an injured Nazi count." Nikki's blue eyes glitter in the flickering light of the lantern between them all, and an amused smile twitches on his lips. "Our Sebastian is right, my love. As much as I appreciate your generosity, I think you're not taking this as seriously as we are." Joe groans and throws an arm over his face as the Italian digs through the pockets of his nearby coat, pulling out a pack of cards. "Maybe we should take pity on you and give you something you can win." "The day Joe beats me at poker is the day I start actually believing in hell," Booker says, tossing back the rest of his drink as Nikki snorts under his breath. "You are both assholes, you know that?" Joe whines, no malice in his voice as his true feelings show through. "The things I suffer for love." "You suffer nothing for love," Nikki hums, shuffling the cards with practiced ease, "because love is the antidote for all suffering. After all, look at us now." Look at them now, indeed. Stealing a taste of bliss, even as a war rages on outside. A moment where Booker can breathe again and let his thoughts go quiet. A moment where the aching of his grin isn't weighed down by the guilt in the back of his mind. He knows it won't last. Knows the work has to continue, even when he's tired and frustrated and ready to give up. But he'll make tonight stretch as long as he can. So Booker pours himself another drink, takes the cards that Nikki passes him, and stretches his legs out to kick at Joe's shoulder, nudging the older man up and into the card game waiting for him. He takes comfort in the warm timbre of Joe's laugh, the curling lilt of the accent in Nikki's voice, the steadiness in the beating of his own heart. The lantern flickers again, casting shadows on the walls, and the laughter between them drowns out the faint noise of the bombs in the far distance. Tonight, this, and only this, is what really matters. The end.